This week, we'll be covering summer showcases getting announced, Star Wars Outlaws possibly getting a release date, Starfield being a bigger hit than many think, all of that and much more. So sit back, relax, and let's have a chat around the bonfire. I am your host, Morgan, aka Bon, and this is a podcast about video game news, reviews, rumors, and speculation. Before we get started, please subscribe to the Bon Diesel YouTube channel, hit the like button, and leave a thoughtful comment, or, if you prefer, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, and if you really, really like me, go ahead and leave a review on Spotify or iTunes. Thank you to everyone who supports all of my content on Patreon, Twitch, and YouTube, with a special thanks to producer-level supporter Hassan. If you're interested in supporting this podcast, please consider checking out the Linktree link in the description of the show. This week was an interesting one. It was honestly pretty slow, but the few things that did come out were pretty exciting, so we'll definitely be talking about those things. Those things are mostly predicated around gaming showcases. We're going to be talking about Xbox, Ubisoft. Surely we'll be talking about something with Nintendo, PlayStation, whatever publishers are still independent. I guess EA. That actually is an interesting one because I don't have any news about EA. EA does have their investor call coming up here in, I think, the next week or two. Which is typically a pretty big thing because since they're publicly traded, they have to reveal a lot of information. And that is typically when they put out a prospective release schedule for the year. And we're really hoping to see games like Dragon Age Dreadwolf and things like that on there. I think we may even see like a Battlefield game on there, but we'll have to wait and see. But I am curious to what like EA is going to do showcase-wise. They could do EA Play again. They could have their own showcase, just not with E3 anymore, obviously. They could attach themselves to Jeff Keighley's show. They could attach themselves to IGN because they're doing their own show this year. Or they could just kind of spread their stuff around all of the shows. I think that's actually pretty likely, but we'll have to wait and see. I think that it's been a weird week because there's a lot of kind of gross stuff still going on in the industry being committed by a extreme minority of gamers. But unfortunately, they're very loud and we are going to talk just a little bit about that. But try not to give those weirdos too much attention and then some other fun stuff that happened. So let's jump into it. We're going to start off with some Xbox news. Rumors of an Xbox showcase being on June 8th are going around and are pretty likely, especially after another showcase announcement, which we will get to. The rumored games could include Gears of War 6, Avowed, Indiana Jones, Flight Sim 2024, and the next Call of Duty. The Gears of War 6 rumors come from an appearance of Jeff Grubb on the kind of funny XCast, which is their Xbox focused show. Grubb, he's as reliable as you want him to be, I guess. I think that his reliability with a lot of rumors has probably gone down quite a bit since he went to Giant Bomb, since he's more of like an entertainer than a journalist these days. But he almost certainly still has contacts. Whether they're giving him good info or not, who knows. But now I believe this has been corroborated by other people, the Gear 6 rumors. And just from a timeline standpoint, it kind of makes sense. It's one of those things where Gears 5 came out quite a bit ago. Coalition, we heard the rumors that they were working on other IP while they were doing Gear 6, and then they dropped the other IP, and they've only been working on Gear 6. It's going to be their first Unreal Engine 5 Gears game. And if you don't know their history, I believe the Coalition used to be part of Epic, Microsoft acquired them many years ago. And even though they aren't part of Epic anymore, their partnership with Epic and the Unreal Engine specifically has been extremely close, and the Gears games are often all the way back to, I think, Unreal Engine 3 at least, have been basically showcases for Unreal Engine. So, you know, it's almost certain, even Gears 5, which was Unreal Engine 4, I assume, if you play it today, which I played it, I want to say a year and a half ago, I jumped in for a while, is to this day, even though it's an Xbox One game, one of the most visually impressive games I've ever seen. It's very pretty, and especially they have some close-ups on your main character and her, just the animations and the textures, and it's very, very good. And it's all in engine, so I'm really excited about Gear 6. I think that's definitely the type of game and information and release that Xbox just really needs right now. They like the ideal thing would be for Xbox to get like Gear 6, a new Halo, you know, like Perfect Dark, to maybe get some of this, you know, some of those big titles out in the next couple of years, just to get people kind of, you know, happy again. But, you know, we all know that may be a fool's errand. Avowed, I don't really need to see more of that game. I'm curious about it, but I'm not, like, super interested. Indiana Jones, similar story. Flight Sim 24, not really my kind of game, but apparently that game is, like, wildly successful and is, like, kind of quietly a really, really big game for Xbox to just have a game that I think got, like, a 9 plus out of 10, and I think has, like, a really good Metacritic score. Even though, you know, you don't really hear much about it. So, and they have some really cool collabs as well. But, and then what is probably the biggest thing here, even though a lot of gamers, hashtag or quotes or whatever, may not agree, is them getting to announce the next Call of Duty during the Xbox showcase and likely getting to announce that it's Game Pass exclusive or Xbox exclusive. Oh, no, it won't be. But it will be on Game Pass because it's not going to be exclusive. But it's almost certainly going to be day one Game Pass. The only reason it wouldn't be is if before the ABK acquisition, they wrote up contracts with PlayStation. And what could get really funny with that is that if they did contracts with PlayStation to not put it on Game Pass, which has been rumors in the past that the reason you never saw ABK work with Xbox, even when it was its own publisher, not owned by Xbox, is that it was almost certain that PlayStation was paying for them not to put their not allow Call of Duty on Game Pass. You know, I think I have a conspiracy that in the years and years coming, I think we're gonna find out that PlayStation, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, PlayStation was probably paying a ton of money to keep all kinds of games off of Game Pass and maybe Xbox in general, but we'll have to wait and see if that ever comes out. But yeah, the Call of Duty thing is going to be a big deal, even if it isn't on Game Pass yet for contract reasons. Just, you know, getting those 10 plus million people to check out the Xbox showcase in general is going to be really good for Xbox, no matter how you cut it. So I would love to see Perfect Dark. I would love to see The Outer Worlds 2 talked about. There's a bunch of games I'm curious about, but we may just have to wait and see. There's likely, I would say almost guaranteed, we'll get some kind of hardware news. The biggest, most exciting thing they could do is tease or even do a light reveal of the next gen, of even just starting to talk about, you know, the next big console, the handheld, even just giving us any insight or confirmation of those things is possible. We could almost certainly, if they don't announce it before, we could see something along the lines of that digital Series X, the white one that's been shown off and is almost certainly going to happen, probably pretty soon, maybe even before this showcase. That is like a weird thing. We talked about it last week. unfortunately, I just don't think that thing's really going to matter to a lot of people. I think most of the people who have purchased Series X's have done it already. The key is if it comes in at like a really good price point. Like I said before, Series X, $499, digital, $399, 1 terabyte S, $299, and OGS, like $249 or $200 even. Maybe that could move the needle. Maybe that could help them a little, especially with some game releases and some big announcements. We'll have to wait and see. There were also rumors about Xbox getting either an Elite or just a new base controller that has the haptics in it, similar to PlayStation. That could be kind of a dark horse reveal here, but we'll have to wait and see. Not really that long, as much as I don't want to admit that June is only 2 months away. It is. And we'll have to wait and see what they have. And it almost certainly we'll get some Game Pass announcements. We'll get some third-party deals that they've done for new games that come this year that we'll see on Game Pass, either exclusive or not. And likely some, you know, maybe slightly older games that are coming to Game Pass finally. And, you know, I think they could do some splashy stuff there. We will see. The other bit of Microsoft news this week is talking a little bit about Microsoft possibly putting an Xbox AI chatbot into the Xbox ecosystem. The idea is that it would likely help with support inquiries as well as refunds. It's weird. It just depends on how well it works, right? If you can bypass having to deal with a real person and it works, then that would be great. If it ends up being a big hassle, obviously people are going to hate it. And if somehow people find out a way to make it really racist, people are going to hate that too. So we'll have to wait and see. I didn't really see any notable PlayStation or Nintendo news this week, besides a story that is PlayStation, I guess, but I'll talk about it towards the end. Some exciting non-platform news was that Star Wars Outlaws by Ubisoft Massive, the same studio as The Division 1 and 2, it's getting a story trailer on April 9th, and I personally am predicting it's almost certainly going to end with a release date. What I will talk about, we'll get to it. This is in line with what we've been seeing lately. This game has been popping up all over the place, getting rated in various countries for its like ESRB rating or whatever the equivalent is in other places. The thing I'm going to say is that like with Jedi Survivor, they gave a lot of details about that game at the Star Wars May the 4th, you know, May 4th celebration, where they do a big showcase and they talk about games and movies and shows and everything that's happening in the Star Wars kind of universe. The fact that they're doing this a month before that tells me that that game is probably coming pretty soon, maybe in May even, because if they wait till they don't want to wait till May the 4th to start doing, you know, marketing and PR. That would be too close to the release date. So they're doing it a month earlier. I think that almost certainly gives us Outlaws coming likely in late May or maybe early June, which would be really, really cool. The only reason I think maybe not is if they plan on making Outlaws a big part of their Ubisoft showcase in June 10th. But I kind of doubt it. It really seems like if it wasn't coming until maybe late this year, they would have just waited for May the 4th or even the June 10th showcase. So I suspect this game's coming really soon. I will say for my own, I guess, exclusive reporting that I have gotten some winks and hints from people potentially in the know that suggest it's coming probably a lot sooner than people think and completely on my own guess. Like I said before, late May, early June, would be pretty cool. I think that'd be awesome. And I think if I'm remembering correctly, that would probably put them in a pretty good spot release-wise without any big games coming out like right at the same time. So I'm excited. I think Outlaws is very much kind of a maybe a below the, you know, the line kind of, you know, the under the attention, you know, candidate to be like a game of the year. I really think Ubisoft Massive, which, you know, has done such a good job with the Division games, getting a chance to flex their narrative muscle, which they've done so well in the Division games, despite looter shooters being just god awful to tell stories in. I think this game is their opportunity to like say, show like, look what we can do gameplay. Everyone knows that we can do beautiful environments and animations and things like that. Now watch what we can do with story. And if the rumors I've heard about how the story is handled and the feeling of the game, which I don't really want to talk about. If the things I've heard are true, I think this is going to be a game of the year candidate easily, really only probably hurt by the fact that some people just don't like Star Wars. But I'm really hoping it's a game that even if you don't care about Star Wars, that just for the experience will be worth it. And so we'll have to wait and see. We'll see if my predictions are correct. In other Star Wars news, Star Wars KOTOR remake is still alive, according to Saber Interactive's CEO, Matthew Karch. If you don't remember, Saber Interactive just recently split from the Embracer Group. There's been rumors that this KOTOR remake was a complete shit show. It was actually with another studio before it came to Saber. Now Saber's not with Embracer anymore. And the rumors were, the people just kind of, I think, naturally assumed that, oh, that game's done. They say it isn't, and so we'll have to wait and see. It is interesting to have the CEO coming out. There's also rumors that are unsubstantiated right now that PlayStation's getting impatient with this whole situation. And, you know, we could very well see them pull themselves off of that project because the game, the KOTOR remake, has been announced, I believe, to be a PlayStation exclusive, almost certainly just timed. It would probably be 6 months to a year. But if we see that drop off of it, if we ever hear about it again, if it truly is still alive, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that it's coming to all platforms because PlayStation is no longer supporting it, aka paying for probably a big chunk of the development. We may see that go away. We'll have to wait and see. Speaking about Ubisoft, talking about that June 10th, Ubisoft Forward, which is what they call their showcases. Going back a bit, why I think that Xbox showcase on June 8th is probably pretty likely is I believe they do their showcases almost always a day or two before Ubisoft. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if this all lines up. We'll probably see someone else do theirs on the 9th. And I'll have to look back and see like when Summer Games Fest and the IGN show are going to be. What's interesting about the Ubisoft thing, I'm expecting we'll see something from Splinter Cell, The Division Heartland, probably the next Far Cry, I can almost guarantee, as well as hopefully some other long-awaited projects. I would assume that we may see something from the Ubisoft Paris team and what the next Ghost Recon is going to be. We could see something from... trying to think if there's any other, man, surely we'll get something else from Rainbow Six one day that isn't Siege and isn't that god-awful Outbreak, whatever they made, that terrible game Extraction. Surely there's something coming from Rainbow Six eventually. Man, I would love to see a Vegas remake or continuation, but I fear that is not in the cards. But yeah, Ubisoft Forward, last year, I'm biased, I know it, but I still think fairly objectively, I think Xbox had the best showcase last year. I think Ubisoft had the second best one, honestly. I thought Summer Games Fest and PlayStation were pretty weak last year. That's not like a complete console war thing. I mean, PlayStation, it kind of makes sense. They released Spider-Man. That's their only first-party game they've released since God of War Ragnarok, and probably nothing else until mid-2025 with maybe Wolverine late in that year. So it kind of makes sense that their showcase wasn't super great, especially if they've been canceling all those other projects. And Summer Game Fest is just, it's too long and doesn't have enough big hits, even though it does typically have some stuff. Ubisoft Forward, especially this year, with a bunch of these potential, you know, things they could show us, could end up being like one of the best shows. As much as people like to dunk on Ubisoft, much of it they have earned, I think it could end up, you know, being a pretty good show. So hopefully they prove me right. We had an interesting report from Newzoo, which I believe is a kind of like analytics company. They said that 60% of gaming playtime in 2023 was playing titles that were 6 years old or older. This was talking about games like Grand Theft Auto 5 and a bunch of other titles. I think at World of Warcraft and so on. The most interesting thing, which I, as a Starfield lover, just really, really loved this metric. The only single player game that cracked the top 10 for gameplay hours last year was Starfield. Now I know what people are going to say. Oh, well, it was on Game Pass, so a lot of people played it, but not for very long, but it still was a lot of play hours. Whatever. I don't care. When it's taking in all of the games that came out, or all of the games that were out, not even just last year, but in years before. So like God of War Ragnarok that came out at the end of 2022, I believe. Oh, or did it come out early? Either way, all of those games were out too. Even Baldur's Gate, you know, and it came out late in the year as well. The fact that Starfield had the most play hours of all for a single player game. So I guess Baldur's Gate wouldn't count. It's technically co-op, even though, let's be real, that's a single player game. If you're playing co-op, Baldur's Gate 3, it's totally fine. I respect your choices, but you're a weirdo. That game is not a co-op game. Come on. Mostly kidding. But still, I think this is really cool and, you know, good for Starfield. As much as the online narrative has really turned on that game, it reviewed really well. I loved it, and I'm always right. But it just, like, it's better than people have given it credit. There's someone who's probably going to listen to this show who I saw say it's a 4 out of 10 game. I expect no less from you. You know who you are, but that's dumb. And that's fine. That's just my personal opinion. I just really think the momentum around that narrative, whether it was because of it being Xbox exclusive, whether it because it's a flawed game, for sure. Like, I'm not sitting here trying to be like, well, actually Starfield was perfect and all the people are wrong. Like, no, most of the criticisms are fair with Starfield. But I still think that with all of those criticisms, there's at least a 7 out of 10 game there for most people. And for a decent number of people like myself, much better than that. So, hey, kind of can't argue with the hours. Maybe you can. I'm sure people will anyways. But for me, as a Starfield truther, I was happy to see this. So good for them. They really do need to get that DLC out, and hopefully it comes with like a bunch of substantial changes to the game, because I do love it, but it needs help. There are some rumors. This is a big Ubisoft show. There's rumors of a joint Ubisoft and Evil Empire, which is the studio behind Dead Cells, of a project for Prince of Persia between them coming out this year. That would be so cool. Because Dead Cells is one of the best feeling games I've ever played. Not just because it's a roguelite, because it's just like, it's just, man, when that game first came out, I played so much of it. And then I dabbled over the years. But when that game first came out, I played a lot of it. And it was so fun. Such a good game. I would love to see them give us their rendition of Prince of Persia, which is wild because from Ubisoft, from themselves, just this last year, or was it this year? I can't remember. They put out a really, really good Prince of Persia game that they made, a side-scroller kind of old-school version too. So Prince of Persia is getting kind of a renaissance, even though it's not in the way you would think. Like, I think most people would assume a new Prince of Persia game would be some Ubisoft open world tower climbing adventure game, right? But now we're probably going to get two within a year that are side scroller and are likely extremely good, both of them. So good for them. That's awesome. This is the one downer I think I wanted to talk about, was this. So if you aren't eternally online, especially on Twitter, You're so good. You're so lucky. You're so smart. Good for you. But if you are, and you're, especially if you're in tune with the gaming community, you'll know that there's this Gamergate 2 thing that a bunch of these dorks are trying to get off the ground. A few people are fairly notable, I guess. One of them is a game dev that worked on, I think it was World of Warcraft, like 20 years ago, and hasn't done anything notable since, who has found a new grift in, you know, playing towards misogynist and, you know, and generally toxic, incel-y kind of individuals. They've really been pushing this Gamergate thing again. If you don't remember Gamergate, go look it up. But long story short, it was a harassment campaign against especially women and people who were LGBT and such, you know, years ago, that, you know, a bunch of these mostly probably white dudes, they probably look a lot like me, didn't like things that people were saying, and had this harassment campaign basically that was really awful. And so there's a bunch of dudes who unfortunately look a lot like me, doing this again. And it's over DEI, or this kind of push, and I'm sure most people have noticed it in the last 5 to 10 years. You know, we're seeing a lot more characters, main characters, who are women, who are not white, who are, you know, maybe gay or trans or you know, whatever LGBT designation, you know, that they apply to themselves. And there's even some consultancy groups and stuff like that who have members of those communities in their studio who will go and do consultant jobs with games of all sizes in their studios who are making them, to say, like, you know, hey, show us what you're doing. We'll give you our take on that. And, you know, like, if your game is trying to be inclusive, to make sure it's, you know, not, you know, doing it in kind of like a toxic way, or if it's not being inclusive enough, hey, here's some tips to make more people feel welcome in your game than maybe currently do. So there's a bunch of these dorks that think that this is making any women in games ugly. That there's all this proof that these just pathetic losers have put out there, showing that, like, there's no attractive women in video games anymore, which is just, like, objectively false. But whatever, it really kind of took a different step this week, where one of these idiots in particular basically made a targeted harassment list for their decent follower base, and especially these rabid weirdos, to target a bunch of community managers who dared to have opinions that this person doesn't like. One in particular was Liana Rupert, who is a former Destiny community manager. And they pulled a bunch of tweets from 3 or 4 years ago. It was really frustrating because, look, I do think sometimes you see people who are, you know, kind of maybe trying a little too hard to be like the ultimate allies to everyone. But I will take that over someone who is some gross, toxic, just waste of breath any day. So even if I think someone's being maybe a little performative or a little cringy about some of their takes, who cares? That's fine. I really don't care. In particular, what happened with Liana was that years ago, literally, she made a point, one of the tweets that these idiots are harping on, that basically there can't be racism against white people. And she kind of explained it a little bit, but not enough. And what's frustrating about it is that all of these tweets are obviously taken out of context. And if you've looked into this stuff, you'll know that it's especially for the United States an issue of, like, systemic racism. And the whole idea is that because for much of our history, you had old white guys in charge of everything, and intentionally or unintentionally, often intentionally, they set up things in the system, in the government, state government, local government, and all of every program. Things are set up that benefited, for the most part, white people, especially white men, and didn't benefit people of color, women, everything like that. Systemic racism, right? While those things are slowly changing and improving, it's still an issue. And the whole idea is that technically white people can't be a victim to that because they're the oppressors, right? Now, the problem is, you know, so you say, like, yeah, white people, you can't be racist against white people because they're the ones with the power. It's true. And what I think these people ignore purposefully is that that doesn't mean that other groups can't be prejudiced against white people. Every group, every race, every culture, basically everyone I've ever met is prejudiced in some ways to different severities against different types of people or cultures or groups or whatever. So you know, everyone can be prejudiced against other people for reasons, you know, personal reasons. Maybe one person is prejudiced against someone for some reason, or entire groups are prejudiced against others. Yeah. And that sucks. And sure, that means that white people can be prejudiced against them. Absolutely. No doubting that. But these people really focused in on this one point that she made, took it completely out of context. And, you know, really, really harassed her and anyone who spoke out with her. And then they pointed out a bunch of other tweets where she basically was doing the kind of, you know, I do consider myself a liberal, if you like that or not, I don't really care. You know, she did have a lot of like white people bad tweets, but who cares? She's just some lady. She has opinions. If you don't like them, don't pay attention to her. But their whole idea was that all of these community managers who dared to have any of these kind of opinions must be pushing that opinion on the games that they're community managers for, and therefore are ruining those games. And that's just not true. It just isn't. One of my favorite things is in The Division. I'm a big fan. I've been around the franchise for a long time. This game, you would think that it is made, at least in some ways, by a bunch of redneck Americans who love guns and shooting things and blowing things up and killing anyone who looks wrong, right? What you'll find is that most of the developers on The Division are hyper lefty Swedes, or people from other countries who are very not conservative, working, and they just love the game. And so even if the game is completely against a lot of their own values and opinions and preferences, they still make this game the way it is. And I'm sure it'll happen one day, but so far I've never seen anyone accuse The Division of being woke or whatever stupid term they've decided to weaponize that month, right? So it just sucks. What's really frustrating about it is that the big names, the people who have the most notability around this thing, even if you don't like the things that Liana said or these other people said, even if you don't like my opinions and all of that, the big issue is that a lot of the folks who are pushing this targeted harassment campaign, which it is, even though they have come out and said, please don't harass these people, just ask questions, which is BS, obviously. They're trying to bully people and corporations into doing what they want. The same thing, by the way, which they're accusing the people that they're harassing of. It's just, what's frustrating is that the big names in this are likely mostly doing this just to get clicks, because they all have blue check marks on Twitter. They all have YouTube channels that are monetized. They're making money. It's a grift. They're making money off of this. And what's unfortunate is how many of the people who are helping them are, whether they're really into it or not, whether they're dumb or if they're just enjoying the trolling or whatever, you know, there's a lot of people pretty passionately pushing this stuff. And it's, I'm a live and let live kind of person. Believe what you want to believe. Think what you want to think, whether it's, in my opinion, stupid or not. But once that stuff starts impacting other people, and once you start, you know, harassing people, attacking people, making people feel bad, trying to get people fired from their jobs and stuff, that's when it turns into something different. That's when it no longer is just you having an opinion, but it's you kind of trying to press your opinion on others, as well as this whole idea of basically abusing, you know, any notoriety that you have. And the big issue is that if Twitter was a decent platform, these things would be clearly marked, which is one of the things you can report on Twitter is targeted harassment. These people would all be getting banned or suspended or whatever, but they won't, because, you know, the biggest social media of its type is owned by a guy who supports this stuff and who agrees with these weirdos. So oh well, I guess. If you know any, or if you follow any of these creators, or especially these comm devs who are getting harassed, you know, I don't really know what the right course of action is, but you know, maybe just shoot them a DM and say, I appreciate you. If you hate everything I just said and it made you never listen to me again, that's fine. Happy trails. A couple more stories before we wrap up here. Jim Ryan claims that PS2 sold 160 million copies or units, which is 5 million more than previous reports, including Sony's own website says, and conveniently puts it out just a little further ahead of Nintendo Switch as it begins to kind of approach that sales record. That obviously means a lot, at least to Jim Ryan. What I found really funny about this is that there's a lot of people who think Jim Ryan, as one of his last gasps before he left the company, wanted to be like, no, Switch won't outsell us. I'm going to make it a higher number. No one can prove me wrong. And it's funny because if you've listened to the show long enough, you'll know that I think PlayStation's obsession with unit sales is weird. I think it's hurt their games. I think it's probably hurt their company in the long run. It's obviously been very good for them in the short run, the last gen or two. But I think that, you know, refusing to put games on PC for literally multiple years, for no real reason other than trying to force people to buy your hardware, is just a bad look. I think it's anti-consumer. I think it sucks. And I think that this last gasp by Jim Ryan probably shows you who was the reason that's been happening. I think it's probably been financially successful for them, at least so far. I think it won't stay that way. I think that even the current CEO, the interim, has even talked about maybe loosening that up and releasing games on PC or other platforms earlier than they have been. But I really, it just was so funny that this is the way that turd would go out. I mean, he was very successful for PlayStation in the metrics that people seem to care about. But I really think that obsession with always selling the most units, selling more consoles, probably hasn't been the best, at least not for consumers. And I'm curious to see how PlayStation may soften their stance on that over the years. It won't happen overnight, obviously, but I bet we see games coming to PC and maybe even Switch or other platforms a lot faster now that Jim is gone, because I think he's laid his cards out pretty clearly of what he cares about. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. The final story here is that Dragon's Dogma 2 has surpassed 2.5 million units sold. That puts the Dragon's Dogma franchise over 10 million units sold. Good for them. That's really cool. I really liked Dragon's Dogma for the first 5 or 10 hours. I got into the 20 plus hour range. I think I'm close to 40 now, and I'm done. I didn't finish the game. I made a whole video about this, but once I look up the ending cutscenes for a game, that means I'm probably done, which is what I did. You know, the combat is pretty solid in that game, even though because it's the same combat as the first game. But every other thing about that game, the environments are really good too, but everything else, the interactions, the reactivity of the world, the RPG elements, the gear, the enemies, the encounters, the random stuff, the side missions, the main missions, the story in general, the romances, you know, all of that stuff just feels so half-baked to me. It just feels so half-finished. In some ways, that game feels like a game that came out in 2024. And in some ways, that game feels like a game that came out in 2010. It's really weird. And it's frustrating because if even half of those things felt finished and fleshed out, this would be one of the greatest games ever made. But instead, I think once you've seen it enough, it's really interesting. You can tell that a lot of the reviewers who gave this really high scores, I bet they played like 10, 15 hours max. Because I think the sentiment from people who have played a lot more of it has been a little more honest. And you can even see it in like what I've seen in the discourse about the game, that it seems like most people who play, you know, your first 5-10 hours, it is great. It's so cool. So many things happen where you're like, oh, wow, that's crazy. But then the facade starts to fail around 20 hours, 25 hours, 30 hours, especially as you get to the latter part of the game. I think it kind of falls apart. And maybe DLC fixes it. Maybe updates fixes it. Maybe mods fix it. I don't know. But it's one of those games where I can see why it reviewed well. And I think that a bunch of those reviewers should have to answer very specific questions about where they were at in the game when they gave it the score they gave it. But that's just my opinion. It would have been a hard game to beat before reviews were due. But hey, you know, I know it's a crazy thought that maybe just because the embargo is up, you don't have to put out your review. Maybe you could finish the game and give a real review. Just my opinion. I'll leave it at that. And that's where I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please consider supporting all of my content by watching, listening, sharing, and following my socials. Throwing a few bucks my way at the Linktree link in the description of the show below. Or, I don't know, just leave a comment or something. That's all I have for this episode of the Bonfire Podcast. So, until next time.